Cristobal is spinning its way inland, and another weekend of protests and riots keeps America on edge as businesses reopen in some of the cities hardest hit by the COVID-19 shutdown. How will it all influence the next round of COVID aid for businesses? We'll find out this morning.
Live from a sunnier side of the street via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Then it's Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. And right after the news, a weather update from Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, the sunnier side of the street, huh? Everything looking good to start another week, huh?
Everything looks really good. We've got some fantastic economic data that that we'll be updating you on here just real shortly. But feels like stuff's really starting to happen, Chip.
Yeah, it does. It does. And the reopening of some of the businesses in New York City. We're still not looking at a reopening of restaurants, which I think people in the city are really looking forward to being able to go out. And I shouldn't say everybody. I mean, there's a third that are probably looking forward to it, a third that are going to kind of sit back and say, all right, well, if it goes okay for a couple of days and people aren't losing their minds out there, then I'll probably go ahead and find my way out within a week or 10 days. And then there's a third that's not coming out.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just it's going to be a wait-and-see kind of reopening in places like New York City and some of the other areas that were hardest hit. But I tell you, Davis, I don't know when we see the kind of protests and the riots, if we don't see some sort of a spike in COVID-19 cases coming here real soon, people are going to really question what the shutdown was all about, aren't they?
I think that they would have to. I know in some of the circles I was in this weekend, that was a topic of discussion.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. No doubt that people are going to want some answers if we don't see some downside consequences of the lack of social distancing.
Right.
That has taken place in many of the cities during the protests and the riots, and it's extremely unfortunate. Everything that led to kick off these protests and the riots, and we'll get Senator Grassley's take on it. I mean, we have to. He lived through the '60s and the race riots then, and was an influential figure at that point already, Davis. So I'd want to get his perspective on what is taking place right now.
Great.
All right, man, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 830 points on Friday to just above 27,000 and is now down just 5% for the year. The NASDAQ gained 2% to 9,814 and has reclaimed its all-time high, now up 9.3% year-to-date after tumbling as much as 25% earlier. The S&P 500 was up more than 80 points on Friday and is now down just 1% for the year. Since it bottomed on March 23rd, the S&P 500 has shot up 40%, Chip. That's the highest return over such a short period of time since 1933, and the NASDAQ is just shy of its all-time high. Looks like a V-shaped recovery in progress, Chip.
Well, and I did not expect this unless it was we had a medical conclusion of the COVID crisis. And as things stand, we don't have that yet, but the markets are certainly suggesting that it's going to happen, and it's going to happen quickly. Real quick on the technology stocks, the NASDAQ, that's all about what we've been talking about basically since day one. It feels like, you know, the future is being pulled forward and we're using technology more actively and aggressively than what we would have if we would have stayed in our regular work patterns. So a lot happening there.
The Labor Department shocked economists, reporting the addition of a record 2.5 million jobs in May. Expectations were for a depression-style decline of at least 8 million. Roughly half of the jobs added were among restaurant workers. The unemployment rate fell to 13.3% in May. That amid predictions the rate would rise as high as 19%. Again, Chip, feels like we're making progress.
Yeah. And, you know, I understand that everyone is, and the way that it's worded is that we have that we added 2.5 million jobs in May. Actually, I think we reclaimed 2.5 million jobs in May and people back into those jobs. But still, it should not take away from the fact that it was much better than expected. And that shouldn't take away from the fact that the unemployment rate is still at 13.3%.
Right.
Jeez.
Yikes. Still work to be done. Yes. Well, on Capitol Hill, Republicans are touting the recent improvement in the U.S. job numbers as a reason to pare spending in upcoming COVID relief packages. GOP leaders, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, have been critical of the Democrats' plan for another round of aid, calling it, quote, a liberal wish list. Favoring a more targeted approach, McConnell said, quote, we must keep the wind in our sails, not slam the brakes with left-wing policies that would make rehiring even harder and recovery even more challenging.
Yeah, we'll talk to Grassley about the narrowing of that package when he's on here in just a bit.
Okay, well, let's hit this quickly. OPEC Plus members agreed to a one-month extension of their record output cuts. The agreement calls for collective cuts of 9.6 million barrels per day until the end of next month. Nigeria and Iraq, who have lagged compliance, will make deeper output cuts to clear the backlog. A draft of the arrangement says that any member nation that fails to comply with the cuts will be forced to make extra output reductions from July to September. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Michael, how are you?
Doing good. How are you, Chip?
I'm okay. Third name storm of the season already. What's the outlook here?
Well, I'll tell you, Cristobal will be making its way up into a very rare track. I'll tell you, very, very rare, making its way up into eastern Missouri, eastern Iowa, western Illinois, and then through Wisconsin. But there's a front west of it that will catch it and also offer up heavy rains for South Dakota, Nebraska, and western Iowa. So some of these guys here in eastern Iowa, western Illinois, 1 to 3 inches of rain locally with this storm. There is also the chance that there can be some rotating storms in eastern Illinois and Indiana tomorrow evening on the east side of that low. So pretty crazy.
So the opportunity for some severe weather, we need to stay aware of that, right?
Yeah, and some of the profiles are pretty astounding, really. The chance for tornadoes and damaging winds here in eastern Illinois and Indiana tomorrow, for sure.
Good grief. So, what a spring, Michael.
I'm telling you. But the bright side, it's going to get very quiet after this for quite some time. So there's definitely a relaxation coming and somewhat normal temperatures for a while, and then we'll look at more heat maybe towards the end of the month.
Okay. In this pattern over the next few days, is there any relief for some of those drier areas in Minnesota?
Yes, there is. It's going to be hit or miss, but there is – some people are going to get some good thunderstorms. It's just a matter if you get under one or not, but there is a chance.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very good. Thank you so much, Michael. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
You bet. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. We've got Senator Chuck Grassley coming up next right here on AgriTalk. We've got a lot to cover with him. You know, and I think we'll probably start with perspective on what is happening in America right now. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. And
Hello.
Joining us right now is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Senator Grassley, thank you so much for making time for us.
Always glad to be with you. And I hope you read what I read over the weekend, that this is the best year in 26 years we've had to put our crops in and the kind of spring we've had.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how's the Grassley Crop Watch going for corn and soybeans?
Well, you need to, every weekend, you need to go to my Instagram and get an update. Corn was 7 inches tall this week and looking very good. I would say, according to my son, a little bit behind last year because of a cooler May. Soybeans, you know, when you do no-till soybeans, as we do it, you never know you have a soybean field until the middle of July.
That can be the case sometimes, no doubt about that. Well, I'm glad that things are moving along very well. Senator, when we've got somebody like you on the show that can offer so much perspective to the current events that everybody seems to be focused on, we've got to start there. The protests, the riots that are happening across the country. Give us your take. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the murder of Mr. Floyd is a shame. And you wonder what that policeman had to be thinking about. Did he really want to kill the guy? You kind of think not. But he had plenty of people telling him the guy couldn't breathe. And what was wrong, he didn't do anything about it. So obviously, he's going to be prosecuted. And I'll bet found guilty. And maybe serve most of the rest of his life in prison. I'd be surprised if he, I think 40-year sentence was something that was kind of normal for that sort of sentence. Anyway, then we've got the demonstrations, and peaceful demonstrations are protected constitutionally. People that are rioting and looting obviously ought to be jailed for their law-breaking, if convicted, and then some people making excuses because of Floyd's murder, that somehow some of this stuff is looting and rioting and burning is legitimate because it's just property. I don't know where they're coming from, but obviously they can say whatever they want to, but I don't have to agree with it. We want peaceful demonstrations, people that want change. That we got a process for considering change, and I'll bet at least at the local level there's going to be a lot of changes, and there might be something coming at the federal level through Congress. I hope we don't end up with federalization of police force protocols, and I hope that we'll know more when Senator Graham gets done with his hearing on police operations. Next week when he has a hearing. I'm going to be at that hearing too.
Okay, good. It seems that they are, in some cities, are pushing towards a federalization of the police force because they're calling to defund or dismantle the police departments in those cities. Senator, that seems like a desperate move.
Well, desperate, it would lead to chaos.
Yeah.
What do they think that, what do they want? Do they want the Wild West law before that? Now, maybe some of the people feel, well, you got the Wild West law, or else what the police did to Mr. Floyd wouldn't have been done. And I'm not going to argue with the point of view that the person that murdered Floyd was wrong and got to be prosecuted.
Yes.
We count on the police to keep the peace, the police to keep the peace, and I think that you want vigilante law? No. Do you want everybody to carry a gun? No. Et cetera, et cetera. So the police fill that void.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Let's move on. The next round of COVID aid. The jobs report that we got. Senator, the last time that you were on AgriTalk, your attitude was, you know what, let's put the brakes on this thing for just a little bit, touch the brakes, Let's find out how the economy is responding to the first round of COVID aid. Seems like that might have been a smart decision, because now, after that jobs report, can't we narrow the focus of the bill that has already passed the House?
Oh, forget about the bill that passed the House. That's okay. A political statement. It's a campaign document and a wish list for every liberal in the United States. Like, for instance, can you believe what does the federalization of elections have to do with COVID-19? Nothing. But they got it in their bill because they want everything run out of Washington, D.C. Right. So I think you stated what I said two or three weeks ago when we talked, and yeah. I'm still at that position.
Okay.
And I think I would have said then that maybe by the end of June that we're going to have another CARES Act, but I think it's going to be in July. And depending on how the economy goes, it's going to be less and lesser as time goes on, assuming the economy continues to improve. But I think there will be another one, but very slim down, and not until after the 4th of July.
The next round of aid, the producers that have been forced to euthanize hogs, you know, they were losing money. Now they're out the revenue. They're having to pay for the disposal of those animals. It's not all producers. I get that. But the guys that have been forced to do this are really suffering. What can or should they expect for aid?
Well, that was a point of, well, I don't know what they can expect, but I can tell you I took the position of writing to Schumer and McConnell a letter signed by, I think, 13 other senators that asked for consideration of that if there's another CARES Act.
Okay. Very good. Very good. The Department of Justice is taking the next step on its investigation into the Packers. What's your take on what's happening there?
Very, very positive and very, very surprised by their actions. Over the last 25 years, I don't know how many letters I've written to Justice Departments asking for investigations, because we would have this situation, you know, over various times, maybe not exactly like what we have right now, but I had suspicion the antitrust laws weren't being followed, that there was colluding and all that sort of thing. Never got much attention. I wrote my letter maybe 2 months ago now. It was followed up by other senators writing, the president getting into the game about a couple weeks ago saying he wanted Barr to investigate this. So we have the news that they're going to JBS and to other companies, national, et cetera, for all the documents and the records they have to see what that shows. I don't know what it's going to show, but at least people know that there's somebody watching over them. If they did something wrong, they'll be prosecuted. If they haven't done anything wrong, then those of us that think that there may have been colluding, when you get the price of beef going up, down 69% and the price to the consumer going up 24%, there's something wrong. And maybe there's nothing wrong, but we welcome this investigation, and I'm surprised it's happening. I'm also tickled that this comes on to the prosecution of executives with Pilgrim and other companies like that that was announced last week.
All right. EPA, the RFS waivers, it continues to make headlines, I guess. What's your message to EPA Administrator Wheeler?
You better keep your promise of 15 billion gallons, or it's going to affect the president's reelection. And he surely would want that president to be reelected. Well, it's doing nothing more than EPA carrying out a promise made by the president in the Oval Office on September the 12th to Reynolds, me, Ernst, several other senators, the vice president, the president, Wheeler was on the phone, etc. It was all generally agreed. Then EPA comes along and writes regulations that looks like they're kind of squirrel their way out of it. and credibility not only of EPA is hurt, it was already bad, hurt worse, and then it hurts, it raises questions about the president. So I think the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals is the best thing for us to stand by. They said that EPA were granting waivers illegally.
Right, right, absolutely. Senator Grassley, the time always goes so fast. Thank you so much. I can't wait to have you on again.
Okay, God bless you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Senator Grassley. We'll be right back with Machinery Pete.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, I guess I'd just call it a really quiet start to the week, right?
It is, Chip. You know, not a whole lot of price action going on, and that's all right, I guess, kind of limping into the week here. We do have USDA's reports for June coming up at the end of the week, and so, you know, maybe we will see a little bit quieter trade, but corn is slightly favoring the upside, and soybeans are slightly weaker, and I think we're seeing some spread unwinding action in those markets. So getting out of short corn, long soybean spreads, to a little bit of a degree, because like I said, the action is pretty quiet here.
Right. And plus, it seems like the market is trying to factor in the potential for some really positive mid-June rains.
Yeah. You know, we've got some pretty heavy stuff coming up here with Cristobal and all that, remnants from that and push up. But there's some uncertainty. And then you get into the second half of the month, it's going to be warm and dry. So I think the market's trying to figure all that out here at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, not easy at this point. Mixed trade going on in livestock.
Really, you know, you want to talk about quiet, that's a quiet start to the week there, too. Live cattle futures slightly favoring the upside through the morning here so far. Feeder cattle slightly favoring the downside, and then mixed price action in the hogs, and just not a whole lot of movement, to be honest with you. So it is really quiet there. We are getting slaughter levels closer back to normal levels, and so that's something I think that is having a calming influence on price action here in the livestock markets.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Brian. Thank you. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Joining us now, Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, guys.
Good. Beautiful start to the week, huh?
Yeah, warm. I think it's supposed to be low 90s here in Minnesota, so we're Scandinavians, we're sweating, but we'll take it.
No doubt. Hey, let's jump right into it. We've got a lot to cover today. I want to make sure that we get it all in. So what do you got for the pick of the week?
Pick of the week, we go last Wednesday, our friends at BigIron.com, their weekly online sale. Of course, fantastic event there. Tons of equipment, all kinds of stuff from all over the country. What caught my eye, Chip, were a pair of 2014 Kloss Lexion 750 TT track combines. Don't see a ton of them around. You know, starting to see more on the auction market, but they had two of them again, both 14 models, one at 1,385 engine hours. And that went for $124,251. And the other 14 model, a few more hours, 1,539 engine hours, sold for $100,251. Now, important to note, both came from southern Texas. Forget the name of the town, but it's just southeast of San Antonio. So, you know, look at those prices. They might sound a little light, but actually when you get comparing, I did see one end of March on an online farm auction in Richardson, North Dakota. It was newer, a 15 model with way less hours, 929 engine hours. That brought $163,250. So for southern Texas, with higher hours, a little older, that 124 and a quarter. I just found it interesting.
Yeah, okay. Very, very cool. You said that we don't see a lot of these combines, they don't show up that often. What, is it just because they're a rare breed or because they're still at work?
Well, it's just sort of the distribution network, actually. I mean,
okay,
you know, compared to the green ones and the red ones.
Yep.
It would be somewhat similar, like a Massey combine, you know, really good machines out there. We just, you know, we, they tend to show up in pockets where there's a strong dealer that's got a good good local chain. I did also want to compare, just to throw it in, I looked on our machinerypete.com website today on the dealer side, and the Lexion 750 TT track combines. Today, the current average dealer advertised price is $192,977. So just for some perspective on those hard cash auction prices.
Right, right. Okay, good, good. Let's go over to your YouTube video. I want to make time for this story because it's such a good story. The video that you posted over the weekend. Let's talk about Ryan Buck.
Yeah, Ryan Buck from he grew up in Goodhue, Minnesota. Now he farms in Avassa, Minnesota, a little town, beautiful country up there near Red Wing and Goodhue. Mm-hmm. I've known Ryan for quite a while through the Minnesota Corn Board, Corn Association. I do a lot of talks on the circuit for him. And Ryan was in a snowmobile accident in 2008, and he was paralyzed from the chest down. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Ryan, he has farming in his heart, and he just kept farming. And he and his wife, Lauren, farm with Lauren's folks, Steve and Lene Carlson. And for years, what they would do with Ryan, they had rigged up a Toyota forklift with a special prongs off the front. They would, on a chair, they would lift Ryan, Steve would lift Ryan up, and they'd get him into the cab of the tractor, the combine. And,
right.
You know, it allowed him to do what he needed to do, but it was problematic and just not super efficient. But then at a farm show a couple of years ago, Steve just happened across a company called Life Essentials from Walcott, Indiana. And they make lifts, not just for ag, but all kinds of applications. And they wound up buying this lift that goes on the back of Ryan's Chevy pickup. It has to be a 3/4 ton. But for years, I've been trying to coordinate with Ryan to go up and shoot a video. And it worked out, went up. And I tell you, watching him get in and out of the cab of their John Deere 9420R was amazing. It just took like a minute, just zip, zip, up and down. And it was fun talking to Ryan and Steve and Lene about it. And yeah, posted that video Saturday. And Ryan's just a great, great young guy, inspirational story.
Yeah, what a fun family.
Great family. They love to farm. I tell you what, Lene, Ryan's mother-in-law, she is an unbelievable photographer. We got looking in their farm shop, and she was showing me just some of their pictures she was shooting, and I was like, Lene, I need to hook you up with the Farm Journal people. You have an amazing eye. So really fun people. So
excellent, excellent, excellent. What other videos you got coming?
I got a fun one coming tonight. Was sent this by some of our Facebook followers in Bad Axe, Michigan, of a restored John Deere 3010. Doing some old school plowing, Brent, Cody, and Jan Wessels, and they have a restoration business up there, custom paint and restoration in Bad Axe. But really good video, so I'm going to try and get up that posted tonight. So if you follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, check out that video, or you can find it on machinerypete.com too.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, you know, we've been talking for weeks, even months, Greg, about
years.
Years of the strength of these older tractors, you know, 10 years old plus.
Yeah.
And you've been giving us all kinds of numbers on, you know, to support the case that there is strong demand out there. What anecdotally do you have that supports that, that demand for those older tractors?
Yeah, it's we've got, well, you know me, Chip, I'm a data guy.
Yeah.
So different types of data to confirm the truth of what we know. These pre-Q4, pre-def tractors in good condition, low hours are such demand. Yeah. So this weekend, you might, folks maybe caught some of the social media posts I had, but three in particular that just rang the bell, and we get so many links, clicks to the link, but We had a 2008 John Deere 9630T track tractor. Now, this thing, amazingly, only has 18 hours on it. It's for sale by Midwest Wholesale Tractor of Quincy, Illinois. Sam Woody and the crew there. So we posted this, and the click-through rate on the post was just off the chart. But again, it's based, that is a brand-new 12-year-old tractor.
Yeah.
Now, we also had a post yesterday on another 2008 model, so again, 12 years old, of a John Deere 7930 front wheel assist, 2,640 hours, IVT, always shedded. Now, this is a for sale by owner item in our website, and it's from a seller in South Dakota. But same thing happened, Chip. Just amazing number of clicks on it. People, you know, sharing the post to their friends. Hey, check this out. This is what we need.
Yep.
And we had another one, a 2009 Challenger MT865C, just over 2,000 hours on it, a one-owner rig. This is for sale at a dealer, Lund Implement in Madison, Minnesota. Again, posted that this weekend and got a ton of clicks. Now, I do have to throw in, Chip, whenever I mention Madison, Minnesota,
yeah.
So I'm a golfer. I've been playing since I was a little guy in Benson,
yeah.
Minnesota, where I grew up. Madison is so cool. They're a little nine-hole course. They have, like, big, tall barber poles on two or three of the holes that if you go to the side of the barber pole, you're out of bounds. It's the only course I've ever seen that. Love it. So Matt, great town, Madison, out there in western Minnesota.
Very cool. Very cool. So these older tractors, this trend isn't going away anytime soon, is it, Craig?
No, it's not. In fact, that as things have been so difficult and stretched out here the last, you know, number of years, the trend is actually accentuated. Because, of course, you know, like we always say, but it's true, the price of new just keeps going up. So that 9630T with 18 hours or the 7930 08 model with 2600 hours, it's what everybody wants. And quite honestly, I think a lot of farmers back in the good days of, you know, 2008 through 12,
right.
A lot of farmers bought a lot of new iron, a lot of it for tax purposes, but with kind of the half thought that, you know, I'll use this thing, but I'll keep the hours kind of off.
Right.
So that down the road, they knew when it got to be 10, 12 years old, low hours, that's the magic beans right there. Everyone's going to want it, and it holds its value. So we're seeing it, and again, it's universal.
Yeah. So do you think that this becomes a, you know, 10-plus, 12-plus, 15-plus because it's all pre-def?
That's a huge piece, obviously. And then the cost piece is the other piece. But, yeah, I mean, you drift into the pre-def, pre-tier 4, and it's, you know, that, you know, folks, we all have different takes on it. But it is, I mean, tag along with me to any auction with a low-hour, you know, pre-def, pre-tier 4. And the auctioneers figured out long ago that that's what they lead with.
Yeah.
You know, hey, it's pre-def, pre-tier 4.
Yeah.
But I would say I'd balance it and say the 5- to 8-year-old models, the tier fours, the DEF tractors, they have strengthened a little bit if they're really good condition low hours.
Okay.
And that to me is linked, like always, to the high cost of new.
All right. Really quick, hit us with some dealer news.
Dealer news, our friends at Mitchell Equipment out there in Atkinson, Nebraska, they just added a second location in Humphrey that was Beller and Backus Incorporated. So Mitchell Equipment, great folks out there. So hats off to them. And fun to see a dealer consolidation. Once in a while, it's not 10 stores to 20, but 1 to 2. So,
yeah.
Good folks out there.
Yeah, I like that. I'll admit, that does make you feel good. All right, Craig, thanks,
Greg.
Buddy. Appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good week.
All right, that's Craig Peterson, Machine Repeat, with an update on what's going on out there in the equipment world. Guys, pick up the phone. Give us a call. The next segment is for you, 855-4-TALK-AG. You can also hit us with a tweet. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. We'll be back to wrap up the first hour of AgriTalk in just a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer. Bayer is committed to delivering better solutions for farmers while enabling them to operate more sustainably. Bayer, science for a better life.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to Agri Talk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
Yeah.
And we want you to join us. 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us. And when you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I should be sure to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. The conversation with Senator Grassley, I want to go back to that.
Okay.
You could almost hear some satisfaction. No, not almost. You could hear satisfaction in his voice when he was talking about the Department of Justice advancing the antitrust investigation and calling for it's basically a subpoena of some of the documents from JBS, Tyson, Cargill, National Beef, the big four that are operating in the cattle industry. He's looking for some answers there. Yeah. He did. That's exactly right. Producer Joe Stackler just reminded us that he used the word tickled. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any doubt that he is satisfied that the investigation is moving forward. Did not get a chance to ask him about 5014. I was holding that back, trying to decide if we had enough time to go there or not. The 5014 proposal, in other words, 50% of negotiated sales to those slaughterhouses that process more than 125,000 head a year must be marketed within 14 days of purchase, blah, all of that. Didn't ask him about it because I know that he's still going to support it, and he's still hoping that that moves forward, but he's not going to have an update on it for us at this point, Davis. So I thought there were some other issues that we should move on to there.
Well, when's the last time we had someone on that used a word like tickled? I want to go back to that. I mean, we've been reporting on some really rough stuff over the last several months, really the last 2 years, and have him roll up and say he's tickled. Well, that's
right.
That makes me feel good. That's a good way to start the week.
That's right. That's right. Yep. And it's the Crop Watch is back. You guys, you got to check it out. Number one, it's good information, but number two, there's some entertainment value in there as well. No doubt about that. And then his comments on the protests and the riots and the dismantling or defunding of the police departments out there.
That's a weird one.
It's chaos would obviously result from something like that, or you got to believe that it would. And I think there's an understanding out there or a belief out there among some that, well, we'll just police ourselves, you know, like calling fouls in a pickup basketball game. But he used the words vigilante law at that point, the Wild West. I thought we had progressed from that. And there are some comments on Twitter about where we would end up if such measures are pursued, including, you know, if some of the guys out there are allowed to take law into their own hands, they will take it. They will embrace it. They will enforce it. They will... It won't be pretty.
Yeah, and at some point you realize, oh crap, this isn't working. Well, now you got to try and take that power back from said people, and that could be a whole other dust up.
Absolutely. Okay. At the start of the show, I made mention that, you know, if this COVID outbreak doesn't happen again after all the protests and all the riots, don't read that as me hoping for a second wave of COVID outbreak.
See, and I thought about saying, you know, well, we don't want anyone to get sick, of course. Do we really need to add that disclaimer? You know,
in this day and age, you do.
I suppose so.
Otherwise,
we don't want
it's
people
be
to
out
get
there.
Sick.
Oh, hey, I'll just put it this way. The emails have already started to come in.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Therefore, you know, I'm not hoping for anybody to get sick from this, but it does raise it would raise a ton of questions. Number one, how many of those in the protests and the riots have already had it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number two, was it as contagious as initially indicated? Mm-hmm. Those are the questions that are going to be coming up. Got this from at Corn Firmer. He says, tens of thousands have flocked to the lake that I frequent the last several weeks. Still zero coronavirus cases in that county. And go back a couple of weeks and remember what the uproar was coming out of Memorial Day weekend.
Remind us.
Remember? Ozarks.
Oh, sure, yeah, the swimming pool bar thing.
Yeah, and how it was just packed and how people were just appalled that they would have the gall to get together. And sure, they may not get sick, but what about grandma? What about grandpa when they go to visit them? Well, you know, so far, I don't think that there's been an outbreak resulting from what took place down at the Ozarks over Memorial Day weekend. If I'm wrong on that, I'm wrong, and I'm willing to admit that, but I haven't heard anything about it, and I'm sure that the media is watching for it, is watching for that to happen. So we need to keep track of that. There's no question. Real quick, you want to talk about some more good news? Let's do it real quick.
Yeah.
Last week's cattle slaughter was estimated just 4.4% under year-ago levels. That is a dramatic improvement from last month when kills were still down about 40% from year ago. And a big Saturday kill was expected to push hog slaughter 1.7% above year-ago levels. Above year-ago. We're getting back somewhere. We are getting somewhere. It doesn't mean that all the problems are gone. We get that because there's way too many hogs out there to get current without taking some drastic measures. We're going to talk about that this afternoon. Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group is going to be joining us. Looking forward to that conversation. And tomorrow morning, Tom Vilsack, CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, right here on AgriTalk. Come back this afternoon.